Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. This is what we do each and every week. Give you that Titans content that you want. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. And we have Elijah Campbell hitting the switches. We got a packed show today, right? We're going to go over offense and defense, better, same, or worse. Elijah and I will break that down. And, hey, there's three facets to the game, so you know we got to do special teams. So Run TMC this week, we'll focus on that. Chris Sanders and I will break it down. But as we mentioned, we're going to go better, worse, or the same, starting with the offense. And, Elijah, what's going on, man? You ready to do this?
Oh, I was born ready.
Stay ready so you never have to get ready. That's what I'm talking about, man. So let's just look at a couple things from the offense, just as far as how things worked out last year. This is a team that averaged 396 yards per game, right? That was the second highest average, tied with the Bills. And then they averaged 30.7 points per game, which was fourth in the NFL. You know, Coach Arthur Smith had that thing rolling, obviously. Mm. But you subtract Arthur Smith, you subtract Corey Davis, you subtract Jonnu Smith. And that's what you have this year. You add Julio Jones, you add Todd Downing, Anthony Firkser is elevated. So we're going to look at each position. And you know what? Let's start with the quarterbacks, because I think, you know, this is where it all starts. And obviously they haven't made any huge additions. They didn't have any losses, but you have Ryan Tannehill, Logan Woodside, and DeShone Kizer. Do you think that they are better, worse, or the same?
I'm going to say better. And okay, you start off with Ryan Tannehill. Obviously, he's having his last year and a half have been career seasons for Ryan Tannehill. We all know the story about him revitalizing his career here in Nashville. You can only think that by adding a weapon like Julio Jones and having that this offensive arsenal that he has right now, it's hard to imagine him getting worse or like falling off some kind of cliff. I know we talked about going into last year, regression Ryan Tannehill might have, and that really never came. I mean, I think this is what he actually is. I mean, he's overlooked in Miami, was maybe in a situation that didn't suit him, and now he's got it where he is in the best position possible to succeed. So then add to it that, you know, Logan Woodside was your primary backup last year, and you didn't know what you have out of him because, thankfully, you didn't have to play him. Ryan Tannehill was healthy enough to play all 16 games, plus the playoff game against Baltimore. So you don't really know exactly what Logan Woodside is, but adding DeShone Kizer, I think, makes this group a little better because he's at least got some NFL experience. You know that the talent's there. We talked about him a couple shows ago about his time at Notre Dame. He did exhibit a lot of natural talent. He's got a lot of it. He won a lot of games at Notre Dame, and he's already proven himself in terms of his talent with his arm that he could be a suitable backup. I mean, granted, he didn't play, I guess, fare very well in his first stop in Cleveland, where he actually got to start some games, but who on that team did? I mean, he was in a pretty tough spot. So I think the depth, I mean, you got at least, you know, Ryan Tannehill, who is a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback right now, and I would say one of the top six, seven, maybe even five quarterbacks in the NFL at this moment in time. And then you have what I think could be a reliable backup in Kizer, who's got a lot of natural talent. And then Logan Woodside, who, even though we haven't seen much of in actual game time, we do know the Titans and the Titans coaching staff think highly of him because they trusted him with that backup role last year. So overall, I'd have to give the edge to it being better than it was last year in terms of the group.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I think it's better. And that's actually what I wrote on ESPN.com for my better, worse, or same offensive perspective. And for me, it's just, I feel, and I've said this before, there isn't really a huge transition that has to happen if Tannehill should go down. You could still conduct the offense in much of the same way with DeShone Kizer back there pulling the trigger. And I think that's really important to have that type of continuity from starter to backup. Now, are you going to get the same results as far as like the high efficiency quarterbacking? I don't know, but I think you could still have things role very similarly as far as the play call is concerned. And you have to look at one other thing as well, and that's just Kizer this year is actually starting camp with the team, and he's going to practice with the team, as opposed to last year, where he was kind of like a quarantine quarterback. He was isolated. It was just him and Pat O'Hara working together. Now he'll be able to feel things out, know the speed and the way that these receivers come out of breaks, and that only help if he has to get rushed into the game. Obviously, you don't want him playing because you want Tannehill in the game to continue his run as, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in football. So I'm going to agree with you there. We're going to go better at the quarterback position. Now moving on to running back. So the additions, you got Brian Hill, Mekhi Sargent, Torrey Carter at fullback, the losses, Deontay Foreman, Snorris Perry. I think when you look at this unit, I'm going to go with the same. And for me, I could go better here easily, right? Because you got what should be a full year of Darrington Evans, but we don't know if it's going to be a full year, right? So that's something to look at. You got McNichols still in the mix. Kari Blasingame getting – and shout out to Kari Blasingame. He got married last week, a week and a half ago. So shout out to him, man. The video of his wedding that he put up was awesome, man. I definitely had to retweet that one. So, Kari, shout out to you on that one, man. Congrats on the wedding. But he'll be back in the mix. And I think it's time that they start using him a little bit more, too. You know, you got the he ended up on – you got Moss, right? He mossed Will Compton in 2019 in the Raider game. So he definitely has the ability to make plays. But I think this running back position is going to evolve into – obviously, Derrick Henry is going to get the bulk of the carries. 300-plus, I think, is still what he'll get. But it's going to be kind of like a three-headed monster. And I said it the other day on Darren Donches and Chase. I said on their show, it kind of reminds me somewhat of a version of what the Eagles had back when they were making their Super Bowl runs with Deuce Staley, Carrell Buckhalter, and Brian Westbrook. And I think you look at Brian Hill, Derrick Henry, and Darrington Evans, it's basically a very similar formula where you have your bell cow in Henry, and you got your guy that could catch passes in Evans, and you have your guy that just does both and is just a consistent player in Hill. So I think – and McNichols is still in the mix. You know, we'll see if they carry four running backs, right, and five with the fullback. We'll see. But I think, you know, this group is pretty solid. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to shift to better because I think with Brian Hill coming into the mix, that gives you an even more reliable backup.
Yeah, you talked yourself into it, didn't you? But yep. Into it being a little better. And it's hard to disagree with that just because, I mean, the group is led by the best running back in the entire league. So it's really hard to get worse. The only way I think it could get worse in any situation is if you just get absolutely nothing from any of the other guys. And last year, it was a rotating chair of backup running backs as well because you didn't get a full season of Darrington Evans, who's going to be, I guess, one of the ultimate wild cards from last year's draft class, because we've heard a lot about how versatile Evans is and what kind of weapon he can be, but we haven't actually seen that on the field yet. I still think you can still see that from Evans getting a full offseason, a little bit healthier. It's hard not to see better for me because of that, because if you just get... 11, 12 games of good Darrington Evans to be able to alleviate some of those carries from Derrick Henry, and you can preserve him just the slightest bit, it's an ultimate win. You know, he doesn't have to be a Pro Bowler. He just got to be able to alleviate that pressure a little bit. And if he's able to do it, or any of these guys on the roster right now, whether it be McNichols or Brian Hill or even Kari Blasingame, then it's going to be an ultimate win regardless, just because you're able to help your big picture here. So I think better is totally fair. I might have to go same just because, I think you talked me into it as well. Mostly because they're just healthier going into this year.
Yeah, yeah. A healthy Evans, that gives you a guy that can hit a home run when you take Derrick Henry out of the game. And that's critical to still have. So I definitely agree with you on there. Yeah, a lot of that. So let's move on to the wide receiver position. And this one is interesting, right? Because you have the loss of Corey Davis. I mean, When this team lost Corey Davis, there was a lot of hemming and hawing and a lot of I don't know and side-eyeing. And I guess they had a plan all along. But so you got Corey Davis, Adam Humphries was released, and Khalif Raymond has moved on to the Detroit Lions. The additions, Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds, Marcus Johnson, Des Fitzpatrick, Racy McGrath, Fred Downtown, Freddie Brown, Kalijah Lipscomb, Mason Kinsey was put back into the mix after they released him, and he went up to Massachusetts. He played for the Patriots, went up to New England. So the returners, you got A.J. Brown, Cam Batson, Cody Hollister, Nick Westbrook-Ikhinne. I think that this group is better because I feel that Julio Jones is an upgrade from Corey Davis. Yes, even Julio Jones, who is 85 to 90% of himself, I still think it's an upgrade. And then you mix in Josh Reynolds. I think with that, the deep pass catching ability that he has and the ability just to have three big bodies there, I'm going to say this. Keep an eye on Marcus Johnson. Watch out for him. He is a very consistent player. He showed up multiple times, and Ryan Tannehill has already leaned towards going to him during mini camp. So we'll see how that carries over to padded practices. I know from watching him in Philly that he's very capable. Obviously, Fitzpatrick is a guy to watch, and Mason Kinsey as well. You know, low red zone one-on-ones, I'm talking about making DBs look silly. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. So I think this group is better, all things being considered, even though they lost Davis, Humphries, and Raymond.
Yeah, I think so too. It's really hard to pick up Julio Jones at no matter how healthy or how old he is and say that your wide receiving core got worse, you know?
Right.
To me, it's got to be better because not only do you add that, but you have made your wide receiver room so much deeper. Just think of the names, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds. And then think of the other group, A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds, and Des Fitzpatrick, or, you know, insert other wide receiver here. We went through, you know, the whole list of names. And obviously the list with Julio Jones makes everything sound deeper and better. So, like, that alone makes you one of the best receiving corps in all of the NFL. And I really do think, like, you have arguably the best tandem, wide receiver tandem in the NFL. I mean, you can maybe make a case for Minnesota with Thielen and Justin Jefferson, but there's not many, you know, that I instantly look at and like, yeah, I'd rather have those two over A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. I mean, this wide receiving core not only got better, but they became one of the best. And the X factor in all of this, as much as I love the draft pick of Des Fitzpatrick, will be Josh Reynolds. Josh Reynolds is going to be a number three receiver, and his whole thing, the whole career of Josh Reynolds has been defined by being buried on a depth chart in Los Angeles behind other talented receivers, but yet still being pretty productive. He's going to have to be able to do that here, but he's going to be a little more prioritized than he was in Los Angeles with all the attention that A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are going to demand. We're going to see how much Josh Reynolds was able to learn from that stint in Los Angeles and how he's going to be able to make a big jump forward because he's going to have a ton of favorable matchups, and I mean a ton of favorable matchups week in, week out. He could really be, I guess, the sleeper on this entire offense. I still expect him to be really productive.
Yeah, and he said he was coming here to make a name for himself. So obviously that was before the addition of Julio Jones, but still, I agree with you. He's going to get a lot of favorable matchups. You're going to see him going against a lot of number three corners, you know, and those type of things. So I definitely feel he'll be able to show and prove. And it's funny because I got to talk to him a little bit at Anthony Firkser's camp. And he said that even though, because I asked him, you know, where he was as far as like after Julio Jones was acquired. And he was excited about it. And he said he's already, and he said it on the Zoom as well, that Julio Jones has already impacted him and showed him some things. So it's pretty cool to see a guy still, you know, have the same plans that he had, even though a big obstacle was placed in front of him as far as taking up targets. So I think it's a good situation. But speaking of Firkser, right? Tight ends. This is one. Well, you know what? Before we go and give ours, let's go back. Delanie Walker. Let's hear what Delanie Walker, former Titans tight end, had to say about Anthony Firkser. Check this out.
You know what? He sat under me for years, and I try to, you know, teach him everything I know, but the dude got wiggles. He can get open. He can catch the ball. I think he's going to be elite. Just adding Julio, it's going to open have more opportunities for him over the middle, the matchups against linebackers, and that's going to be hard for them to cover him because he'll destroy a linebacker within seconds. So it's going to be good. I feel like this is going to be a good year for him. I'm excited. I hope he does well because I want him to get paid. So that's what it comes down to. Just hope he does well. I know he's built his confidence over the year, and now he has that opportunity to be the starter. And I told him that last time I saw him, I said, it's your opportunity. Don't lose it because they don't give it to many people often. So he has this opportunity to be great. And I think with Julio and AJ and Derrick Henry, that opportunity is high.
So according to Delanie Walker, Firkser is on the path to being elite. And I'll say this. I love his route running. I love the way he's able to consistently get open and just square up and have that number 8-6 there for Ryan Tannehill to see clearly and get the ball to. I think Firkser is a guy. Actually, Mike Vrabel said they're going to feature him in the red zone, right? And we already know third down situations, that's where they go to him with the football. But Jonnu Smith is gone. Michael Pruitt is gone. So now you're left with Anthony Firkser, Jeff Swaim, Tommy Hudson. You have the addition of Miller Forrestall, Briley Moore, and Jarrett Pinkney. Now, Pinkney's a wild card. I want to see what happens with him. I'm very curious how he comes in, but I'm going to say this. They got worse, but I think Briley Moore is the name to watch. And if you go back and you look at some of the stuff at Kansas State, he did a lot of that H-back role that Michael Pruitt, he filled that role. So now you've got him. He's a very athletic guy, too. So I'm curious how that's going to work. He's a guy I'm going to be watching closely. I saw him make a couple nice catches, actually, during mini camp. So keep your eye on him. Miller Forrestall is in the mix, too. He made some catches. So I think, you know, there's upside, but I still have to say, anytime you lose Jonnu Smith and you lose Michael Pruitt, I don't think that you and you didn't fill it with the, you know, very significant additions. I think you got worse.
Yeah, especially playmaking additions too. And I guess that's what they're maybe envisioning Jarrett Pinkney can be, because a lot of people here in Nashville are going to remember his junior season at Vanderbilt, where he had a really solid year. He could have gone to the draft that year and would have been selected. You know. And it just took a really bad, same for Kalijah Lipscomb. They both had a really bad last season at Vanderbilt, which everyone on that Vanderbilt offense had a bad season. When an offense is that anemic and that bad, it's hard to make anyone look good. And that's obviously affected his draft stock and the career path he ended up taking afterward. But there's still that potential. That upside is still there for Jarrett Pinkney. And I guess that's one of the reasons why you bring him on. I'm a big Anthony Firkser guy. Big fan of Firk Nowitzki, as I like to call him. But
Firk Nowitzki.
Yeah, I'm hoping that one sticks. But Anthony Firkser, anytime you're tied in as sure-handed as he is, I think your nickname of sticky fingers, sticky hands, comes into play here.
Sticky fingers.
Yeah, anytime. Like, the ball does just stick. And he's made some clutch catches where you need a reliable pass catcher who's just going to catch the ball. If it's in his catch radius, he's going to catch the ball. And even if it's not too fancy, and that's exactly what you need out of tight ends, too. I think the Titans will be fine at tight end, but when you lose Jonnu Smith specifically, and I love Michael Pruitt, but the Jonnu Smith loss to me lost you a little bit of versatility, because it wasn't just like Jonnu Smith is there to just catch passes. You could pull him out of the backfield. You could run reverses. He was such a freak athlete that you had to account for him. The defense had to account for him at all times on the field. His versatility is what made him, to me, a really big weapon. And I actually think that's one of the most underrated additions in the offseason, was the Patriots grabbing him while also getting Hunter Henry, because he can just be, I don't want to say like revert him to a gadget guy, but he can be that, because there's so many ways you can use Jonnu Smith. And anytime you lose that in your offense, it just takes away a certain element that you have. Doesn't make you worse as a whole, but it makes the tight end group a little bit worse. So I agree.
Yeah, for the Patriots, that allows, and Bill Belichick, he's tried to do it multiple times. You know, he's drafted tight ends, he's signed tight ends, Daniel Graham, right? Isaac Asiata out of UCLA. You know, he's tried to get back to that Aaron Gonzalez and Rob Gronkowski look for quite some time.
It worked well.
Yeah, and that worked wonders. I mean, they were unstoppable. And now you look at what they have, and I think that's what they're working to get back to. But as far as the Titans are concerned, we'll see what happens tight end-wise. I think this goes back to them having those three receivers, three big receivers, right? Mm-hmm. Julio Jones, what was something that John Robinson said that he really liked? He was watching that Seahawks game, and he watched how he was going in and digging out linebackers, but specifically that battle with Jamal Adams. So that tells you right there. And Josh Reynolds has played the slot, and he's no stranger to having to go out and take on linebackers. So I think you'll see a lot of 11 personnel, right, and them running the ball out of that. So that's pretty much how it's going to look. Obviously, 12 personnel will be a little more predictable with Swaim in the game. But that's the key. They have to stay from being predictable and allowing – defenses to match up adequately. But one of the other things that defenses have to match up against is the offensive line, right? And this is an area that the Titans have been pretty strong with. I think when you go guard, center, guard, they're outstanding, right? With Roger Saffold, Ben Jones, and Nate Davis, who I will say this, Nate Davis is an all-pro in my book.
Oh, for sure.
And I think, you know, he's a guy that should have been on that all-pro team. Not to knock any of the guys that were on there, but he has done a great job at right guard. And you look at a lot of Derrick Henry's long runs, you know, you'll see it cutting off of Nate Davis. So definitely have to give him a shout out there. And then they're going to have Taylor Lewan back. I think that's huge. The additions, you got Kendall Lamb, Dylan Raidens. The losses, Dennis Kelly, pretty big. Marshall Newhouse, Isaiah Wilson. And when I look at this whole thing, right, I think, you know, getting another year of Nate Davis is significant. I think getting Taylor Lewan back is very significant, but the right tackle position remains the mystery. And I feel Kendall Lamb, Tyson Brailo, these guys will start out there. And then eventually Dylan Raidens will take over. But if you look at the versatility standpoint, you know, you got Aaron Brewer who could play center and guard. You got Daniel Munyer who could play center. You got Quisenberry who could play everything. And then you got Dylan Raidens who could play, who has been working at guard and tackle, you know, both sides. So I think for me, this group got better just on the strength of getting Lewan back and then the versatility that you have in Raidens. I think Raidens will be a starter by week four. But when you subtract Isaiah Wilson, I think, you know, that's a big thing too, because you have the whole idea of you know, all the stuff that came with him. You know what I mean? I think that being gone, I don't feel that's something that guys carry with them in the locker room, but it's good to have a bad apple removed. So for me, I think they're better.
Yeah. It's just a lot of baggage that you had to answer for week in, week out. When I look at this offensive line unit, and that's pretty convincing in terms of thinking of how they got better, because there was a little bit of change. And Dennis Kelly, who's been a revelation for this team, and is one of my favorite John Robinson deals, getting rid of Dorial Green-Beckman, bringing in a guy that the Eagles weren't very high on, and turned him into a starter on some really good football teams and playing a really big role on those really good football teams. I will say they got – I think they're the same, mostly because it's uncertain what Raidens is going to be. And on the record, I did like the Raidens pick, because that North Dakota State offense was awesome, and you can't be that good, I guess, without an anchoring offensive lineman. Raidens can really showed his worth there, and obviously, like, North Dakota State's what, the Alabama of the FCS. I mean, they're a powerhouse, we've heard a lot of about him from Coach Blazek, and hearing Coach Blazek talk in general makes you want to run through a wall. Love that guy. But getting Lewan back was huge, and they survived the back end of the year last year without him, but it would have been really nice, you know, in the playoffs, whenever you need a little bit more out of your run game or protecting Tannehill, giving him some more time, to have had Lewan there. So that alone is a big addition. I would just say the same, just because of that question mark on the other side of, you don't know how good Kendall Lamb would be if he steps in there, or Tyson Brailo for an entire year, even though you do think Raidens gets in there about week four. Which is pretty ambitious. Yeah, which would be pretty ambitious. But, I mean, as quick a learner as we've heard that he is, it wouldn't be too surprising either. But I'm just going to go same. And I that can obviously get better once the season starts. It's just the unknown on that side of the offensive line that gives me a little bit of hesitation to say that they got better.
Yeah. I mean, overall, I think this team got better. I will say, even though I think Ty Downing's going to come in and do a great job, I think, you know, coaching-wise, they got worse just because, you know, no slight on Ty Downing, but I just think Arthur Smith just, he did a heck of a job. And it's going to, those are big shoes to fill. But I definitely feel overall this unit got better. And I look forward to watching them play some offense. And that's pretty much, you know, going to be the key, right? They got to score these points because the defense, there's definitely question marks there. But I think next we'll go over the special teams. Before we do that, let's go ahead and pay these bills. Shout out Freedom Tire Guys. We'll be right back with Chris Anderson.
Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah, that's right. You hear the music. You already know what time it is. That's right. Yeah. Run TMC. That's right. And now we're going to bring in our weekly segment, and let's see, who do we have that we could go to? Oh, and now, starting for your New Jersey Nets, Michael Ray Richardson.
And playing in Sanford and Son, we have Rilo.
He is not going to do me like that. You know what? Just for that, man, we might have to just cancel this segment. That's what I feel
Rilo
about
from Sanford and Son.
I've had people tell me I look like Grady before, so I thought that's what you were going
with. No, you look like Sanford.
Oh, cut it out. So
what's going on, man?
Hey, man, it's, you know, just chilling, man. It's the downtime, so, you know, we got to look for different things to talk about. And, you know, we can't leave any stone unturned, right? So
we
always talk about the offense. We talk about defense. But, man, what about special teams?
Yeah.
And the reason why I wanted to go there with you is because I think there's a guy from the Ohio State University that's going to win the job. But first and foremost, what are your thoughts on this kicker position? Are the Titans in trouble?
I don't know if they're in trouble. I just think that you're dealing with a couple of kickers that are unproven. I mean, you know, we look at last year, if you look at some of the games that the Tennessee Titans lost, it was because of special teams. It was because of a missed extra point or a missed field goal with Gankowski. And I know I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but when you have a situation like that, you better make sure you improve the kicking game. Because if you look at the Tennessee Titans last year, they improved on offense. They were pretty bad on defense, and they were suspect on special teams at times. So if the Tennessee Titans can improve their special teams, and not just in the kicking game, you're talking about the return game, you're talking about kickoff return, you're talking about all these valuable assets of the game. If they can improve the special teams by the kicking game and the return game, then now you took the Tennessee Titans to actually win some more ball games.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There were so many close games that this team, you know, had really just basically come down to Gostkowski's foot. And fortunately, he was able to hit some 50-yarders.
Right.
But it's just when he's inside of the 50-yard line, I don't know what it is, right? It's like Ray Finkel and Ace Ventura, but it's just like it's not working. So they got to figure that part out. But he's a free agent, right? The 37-year-old, right. He's out there. He's the guy that they could go to. But right now, what they have is Blake Harbaugh out of Ohio State and Tucker McCann,
who was
– Yeah, just he's from Mizzou, but he, you know, was on the team last year. But I think if you look at Blake Harbaugh, and here's the thing. So he was 28 out of 35 on his field goal attempts. His long was a 55-yarder. He did not miss a single extra point. He was 146 out of 146 over his career. Wow. I think that's pretty good for a guy that, you know, will come in and help this offense, right? And obviously, yeah, the ultimate cheat code is Justin Tucker, right, from the Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
You get to the opponent's 40-yard line, you pretty much are – you could pencil in 3 points. Now, I'm not saying Harbaugh could be that, but I think, you look at the 55-yarder. It was at Northwestern. Obviously, mm-hmm, you know that's not a place – that is really conducive to long kicks.
Right.
He had a 49-yarder in the rain against Ohio State. You know, so there's definitely some things to hang your hat on with this guy. He was 3 for 3 on field goals from 40 to 49 yards. So I think he could come in and win the job. But for you, like, how would you say is best to gauge whether or not a kicker is ready?
You got to put him in a pressure situation. I mean, I understand that he made some big kicks in college, and you made some big kicks in some big games when Ohio State played certain teams. But you're talking about a different type of pressure now. You're talking about the games on the line. This is about, because the thing about it is when you're at Ohio State and you miss a couple of field goals, you get to keep your scholarship, right? I mean, you could definitely get to keep it. There's a whole different pressure game now when you're playing at a high level and every point counts. You know, what happens if it's in the playoffs? And, he gets up to kick, and they need to kick to go to the next round. How is he going to handle that pressure? So I think when Mike Vrabel and J-Rob, I think in practice, I think in camp, they need to put him in pressure situations to see how he handles it. I mean, that's how you're going to evaluate, because that's what, Mike Vrabel and J-Rob evaluate all the other players. They put him in pressure situations. So now you have Harbaugh. Am I saying his name right, Harbaugh?
Harbaugh.
If he succeeds in the preseason and you put him in a pressure situation and he does well, then he's going to be your kicker.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. So when you say pressure situations in practice, are you saying kind of like, all right, look, Blake, you make this field goal, we're going to end practice early, and you got all the guys behind him making noise and cheering him on. You're saying that? Is that an example of how you could do that?
That's kind of, and I agree with you on that, but it's kind of like this. You know, we have a thing called scenarios. Okay, it's 1:37 left on the clock. We have to get a field goal to win. So the offense is on the field. They're driving down the field. Then he calls, Mike Vrabel calls field goal teams. He runs on the field, and as he's running on the field, Mike Vrabel is saying 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. How is he going to handle it? Mm-hmm. Is he going to focus on his kick? Is he going to get his steps right? Is he going to just take his time? What is he going to do under those situations? Because if he can't handle those situations in practice like that, how is he going to handle it when he's playing Baltimore Ravens and they go through that 2-minute drill, that 1:37, and he doesn't make the kick in practice, and you expect him to make it in the game? Those are the type of pressure situations, scenarios that I'm talking about.
Who was the kicker when you were on the squad?
Al Del Greco.
Del Greco. Okay. Do you remember any type of situations that you guys did in practice? Was it kind of similar to what you just said?
That's exactly what we did. And Del Greco was he didn't let a lot of things bother him. You know, he did his job. He went out there, he kicked, and then in practice, then he went to Waffle House. That's kind of how his mentality was. But the one thing that he did is he handled pressure so well. And I watched him, even though if you look at on our Super Bowl run in 1999, a lot of those games were like 7-3, 10-7. So he was used to that. I know he missed a couple of kicks the next year when we lost to Baltimore in 2001 or 2000, and he missed a couple of kicks. But just watching him, trot out on the field, and when he trotted out on the field, that's why they called him automatic out, because he was always automatic, because he didn't let the little pressures deter him from what the job is he's supposed to do. So, the kickers that they bring in, they're probably going to bring some more kickers in, and that's how they're going to evaluate these guys, who can handle pressure, who can sit up there and say, okay, the game's on the line and make the kick. So if they get somebody like that has ice in their vein, oh yeah, we got something for the Tennessee Titans.
So let's look at Blake Harbaugh. We looked at him. Let's shoot over to Tucker McCann. And so you look at this. He has punter and kicker in his background. He converted 16 out of 22 field goals, 72% success rate, not bad. 34 out of 37 extra points. He had kickoffs. 58 out of 64 kickoffs were touchbacks. Mm-hmm. That's obviously pretty good. But that's kind of where it stops. Like, he had a 52-yard field goal.
Yeah.
He had three field goals of 40-plus yards. Mm-hmm. 4 for 4 Yeah, I mean, so 4 for 4, his best game was against Ole Miss. He was 4 for 4 on field goal tries, one of which was a 48-yarder, and he had all nine of his kickoffs go for touchbacks. Pretty impressive there, but I'm not sure that kind of really stacks up against Harbaugh. I mean, what are your thoughts on Tucker McCann? I mean, how can they – this is a really interesting situation. Vrabel, Coach Vrabel saying that, you know, that this is the competition, right? This is who they're going to have make it happen. So I don't know.
I think the problem is what scares me is when you're 16 out of 22 for field goals. That scares me.
Yeah.
I mean, that scares me. I mean, 16 out of 22, that means, you know, it's you're going to make some, but there's some that you're going to miss. And you know, with the explosive offense that the Tennessee Titans are going to have, if they don't get in the end zone, this can be another weapon if they get a good kicker. So if you're 16 for 22, I don't know. This is my opinion. I don't know if that's going to cut it because I'm not sure if he's going to make it. But I want to get somebody in there that we know that's going to make it. And I think that's going to be the key because – you want to feel confident about your kicker. And I know last year when we had Gostkowski, when he came in, we know he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But once he started missing all those kicks, you start to feel uncomfortable. You start to feel uneasy. And you can't go in the season feeling uneasy about your kicker. You just can't. I mean, those two guys that you just named, they're unproven. They prove themselves in college, but they're unproven at the next level. So I think the way that the Tennessee Titans and Mike Vrabel and J-Rob are going to have to do, they're just going to have to evaluate these guys, throw all the statistics out the window, throw what you did out in college, throw away all that stuff, and say, okay, now we're going to put you in this situation, and you guys are going to compete to see who wins the job. And the guy who wins the job, it's not about stats. It's about who can handle the pressure under pressure.
Yeah, and those numbers were from his senior year. At Missouri. So to your point, as far as veterans are concerned, so if we look at the veterans, right, you got Daniel Carlson from the Raiders, Dan Bailey, Zanga Gonzalez. Now, I'm going to come back to him because he's someone I would look at. We mentioned Gostkowski, Roberto Aguayo. You def Aguayo, you don't touch him, man. That was the kicker. The Bucs selected him in the second round, bro. Second round. That's when you do that, you're expecting to get Justin Tucker, and that's not exactly what they got. And then there's some other just kind of random guys. But the guy that interests me is Zane Gonzalez. Now, he's 26 years old. He's with the Cardinals. He was good on 72% of his kicks last year. Ironically, you mentioned 16 out of 22. That's where he was. He was 2 for 3 on 40 yards or 50 plus. And then from 40 to 49, that's where he kind of ran into some trouble. He made 8 out of 13, but he did make 38 out of 39 extra points. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. 55% of his kickoffs were touchbacks, so he was 36 out of 65. I mean, if they're going to go veteran, this is a guy that I would be inclined to bring in to give a shot.
Yeah. And I think, too, I mean, those guys that you named are, you know, they've been in some situations where they had to make kicks in the NFL. But I think the one thing that we have to look for, and I'm saying we as in Mike Vrabel and J-Rob, is consistency. I mean, if you've got to be consistency. I mean, see, if you go 16 for 22, that sounds good. I mean, that's a good percentage if you're taking a test at Ohio State. But we're talking about winning ball games. 16 out of 22 sounds good. But what's going to happen when you get in that clutch situation? You know, and that's why I keep going back to, because all these guys are just a whole bunch of names. But which one is going to stand out? The one that's going to stand out is when they're in practice, okay, you know, and Coach Mike Vrabel, you know, sets the scenario, okay, it's a minute 37, you got to make the play, you got to set your feet, all that stuff, and they go and make the kicks, and they watch their demeanor, they watch their body language. That's the guy that's going to win the job. But we're naming all these guys, but I hate to say this, but it's just a whole bunch of names.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And I'm saying that respectful. You want, you know, when you say Justin Tucker, woo, that's a dog right there.
But when you say he's the truth.
Like, you just don't know. So I can't say who's going to stand out or who's going to win the job. The point is it's going to be evaluated in camp.
Yeah, and I think that position is so vastly underrated, man. And I submitted my roster projection, and I said in the opener, you know, Blake Harbaugh is the guy I have making it, but we'll see what happens. I mean, you never know. Steven Goskowski could end up back in the mix. That's, I mean, there's so many. The kicker thing is just so inconsistent. But
yeah,
here's the deal, right? It goes beyond just kicking, right? Let's mm-hmm. talk. Let's just touch on the coverage units, right? And I want to just look into, you know, Racy McMath. I want to look into Dan Cruikshank, Nick mm-hmm. Westbrook, and Kenny. These guys, you know, because they're going to be the top guys as far as the arrow thing is concerned, you know, getting down there. But when you – is that something that you ever had to do? Because, I mean, typically they put their fastest guys there.
What, the playing gunner?
Yeah.
You call it arrow, I call it gunner. Man, I did that once or twice. And here's the deal. We were scrimmaging the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't know if you remember Chris Dishman and Mark Robinson. We had when we scrimmaged them, it was live. It wasn't like, well, we're just going to pat you down. No, the crowd was going crazy. So now I step up. I'm like, what in Sam E. Hill is going on? So I had two guys on me, and I just had to beat one, and I went down there and start. They pushed me out of bounds and all this crazy stuff. I'm like, this ain't fun. This is not fun. But the thing about it is you got to get a person on there. You name those names that want to go down there and make the tackle. And the thing about it is you're valuable – if you go down there and you make tackles and you're not just a defensive player or not just a guy who plays wide receiver or whatever, when you go down there, you be the arrow, you call it the gunner, and you go down there and you make plays, it changes the atmosphere of the game. When I say changes the atmosphere of the game, is just imagine, you know, the Tennessee Titans are doing bad and they have to punt. All of a sudden, Cruikshank releases and beats his guy. He hits the guy. He fumbles. We get the ball. It changes. It changes the atmosphere. So you got to get guys on there that don't have to be on there, but that want to be on there, that are hungry. I remember a guy named Henry Mills. And that's all he did. He didn't play linebacker. He didn't play nothing else. All he did was play special teams, and that's how he made his money. So they got to get some guys on there that's hungry to do that.
Yeah, and I think they have some guys. But let me ask you this, okay, because – to me, I feel like Racy McMath and Nick Westbrook and Kenny are, in essence, the same guy. You just have mm-hmm. more athleticism, speed from McMath. So when you look at those two, I mean, what are your thoughts on them as players? Do you think that the Titans would carry both of them, or you think it would be one or the other? Because they're so similar.
You know, Mike Vrabel always talked about when he first got with the Tennessee Titans, he wants versatile players and guys that can play different positions. And that's what's going to determine for some of these guys making receivers or making it as a defensive back. What can you do? You know, just imagine you have a guy that plays wide receiver and a guy who plays wide receiver, kickoff return, punt return, and all these other special teams, and then you have to make a cut. Which one are you going to keep? The guy that's most valuable to the team that plays so many different positions. So I think with some of those guys that you named, that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to make sure that they show up on film every time. I'm going to give an example. There was a guy, this is a true story now. It's a guy that came in receiving my third year. His name was Chris Sanders also. So it was two Chris Sanders on the team. And it was it was two days before cut day. And what he did, he said, Chris, watch this. I'm going to go off on kickoff, and I'm going to jump over the wedge and tackle the guy. I said, man, you crazy. He jumped over the wedge, tackled the guy, and that's how he made the team. So he showed up on film. So, you know, McMath is going to have to do something like that to make sure he stays on his football team.
But if you look at the two, right? So,
yeah,
they're both very raw receivers, right? Westbrook
right.
and Kenny, and they both have size, right? And right. the thing is, Westbrook, I watched him all camp. He was in a he had a physical altercation with the football every time it was thrown to him. You know, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. Like, you can't fight the football when you're a receiver. You got to love it, you know, and bring it in.
You said a physical.
He and the football got physical every time, man. So you got that. But then he made a pretty critical catch on a fake punt during the year. Yeah. And they continued to, you got Joe Rexrode's post about how they like him and how he's a guy that they have in the future. And then you got Racy McMath, who actually he looked pretty good during OTAs and minicamp. Right. Now, granted, short shirt, helmet.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to put too much stake in it. But I just think with both of those guys, you're banking on their special teams contribution and you're looking mm-hmm. at their upside as a receiver. For me, I probably would be more inclined to go McMath, but I just it's a tough situation to figure out what they're going to do there.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, you know, you got to see what he does when the pads come on, because, you know, when you start going Van Gunner and kickoff return and all those other special teams, it all looks good when you don't have no pads. But all of a sudden, when somebody starts to thump you, how are you going to handle it? How are you going to handle when you're playing arrow or you call it gunner? How are you going to handle when two guys are in your face? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So that's the
when that thing is live. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a whole different ballgame, because then in short, you'd be like, woo wee! All of a sudden, man, this dude can't even get off the press when the pads come on. So it's a little thing that we got to evaluate. But the good thing about it is the Tennessee Titans have a lot of options. That's what's good about it.
Yeah, they definitely have options. And even, you know, looking at outside of the Gunners, you got Ola Adeniyi. He's someone that I know they're relying on to be a special teams guy. David Long has been a special teams standout for them. So they have different players. Brady Breeze, I think, is going to.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the – you always need a guy like Brady Breeze on the team, guy who, like, just has no regard for his own body. He's just going to run down there and just blow something up and just feel good about blowing something up. So I think he's going to be someone else that's going to be really good. But what about the return game? Because field positioning is you mentioned, you know, recovering a fumble, forcing a fumble and recovering and how that sets the team alive. But nothing sets the team alive like a nice punt return, right?
Whether it's a
long one or a touchdown. Or a kickoff return, right? You know, you start off the game and you get a kickoff return and you're starting off in the opponent's side of the field. That's something that sets the tone. So let's look at some of these guys that they'll have. Right now, Darrington Evans seems like he's going to be the kick returner. How do you feel about that with him returning kicks?
I mean, I think he's going to do outstanding. He's quick. I mean, he did a lot of things at Appalachian State. And, you know, he's familiar with kickoff returns. But the thing about it is, can he stay healthy? I mean, that's just going to be the case, because you look at the last year, you know, he just wasn't healthy to be in the game, so you really don't know. And this is where McMath can come in, because we talk about his speed, but the thing about it is, can he get in there and actually do it? And just like what you said earlier, TD, is it sets the tone. You know, it energizes the crowd. So just imagine, you know, you get a 50-yard return and you start at the 50 as opposed to the minus 20. It just makes the offense better, makes the defense better, because it excites the crowd. Because if you look at the last couple of years, where did the Tennessee Titans struggle a lot? They struggled on the kickoff return and they struggled on punt. Adoree Jackson couldn't do it, so they put different guys in. Somebody's going to have to step up and take that role. But we just don't know, because you have a lot of guys that are unproven. We know Evans has the capability and the potential to do it, but the key is keeping them healthy. We know that McMath has the potential that he can do it, but it all boils down to, when bullets start flying, who's the person that's going to take range? Who's going to be the guy that they feel confident with to go down there and put the Tennessee Titans in a good field position?
What about Cam Batson? We always talk,
he's
a guy that you continuously bring up. So what about him?
I think it's a battle. I mean, he everybody knows he's good after the catch. We know that he's real shifty, so he can definitely help in the punt return and also in the kickoff return. But I just think the reason why they didn't put him back there is because I don't think they felt comfortable with him. I mean, when you have a Dory Jackson, you know, get back there and they take him out, but if they don't put him in, they're basically saying that we don't trust you. And I think this year, for him to make a big splash, and I agree with you, that if he just goes out there and make himself known on film by doing punt return and kickoff return and consistently putting the Tennessee Titans in good field position. So it's all up in the air, but I think with Mike Vrabel and J-Rob, they got to do a lot of evaluating to make sure they put these guys in position to be successful.
Yeah, a kick. I think Darrington Evans should have the kick return position. Yeah. I think it should ultimately go to him. But I'll say this: punt return. Listen, man, I had him on the show, and I always mention him. Mason Kinsey, I think, could be a guy that could make this roster on the strength of the special teams aspect, but specifically what he could do as punt return, because, you know, he's someone that is very similar to Adam Humphries. They loved having him back there. Maybe not because he was going to catch it and take it to the house consistently, but you knew every time he was going to catch it. And that's a part of the trust thing also, right? Because coaches hate when you know, you stop a team three downs and then you fumble the punt and you give them the ball back. That's an issue.
Yeah, it just takes away the oomph out of the game. It takes away the momentum, because say you get a fumble on a punt return or a kickoff return, it just put you in a bad situation, and the Tennessee Titans definitely don't need that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that that could happen. And I'll tell you this, another guy that would love to get back there on the return, and they would never let him do it. But Caleb Farley, I talked to him, and he said he would love to be in there on the return team. So that's someone that you see when he gets his hand on the football, he could do some things. But,
oh, yeah,
you know, just getting him on the football field alone, that's going to be a blessing for the Titans. So I wouldn't really push it too far.
No doubt, man. No doubt.
So there you have it. We pretty much covered the special team side of it. It's just a part of what we do, right? Leaving no stone unturned, man. I appreciate you coming on. Is what
always,
we do,
man,
each and every week. And
always.
Yeah, we'll take it from there. And don't let anybody tell you that your game is like Oliver Miller from the Phoenix Suns back in the day.
Hey, I'm going to watch you on TV tonight, Rallo from San Francisco. I got you.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD. On the count of three,
everybody run back to your fantasy. Now, yeah, as you hear Common say, go. That's what they need this defense to do. Go. Go out there and stop some people. A few pretty terrible stats that we'll go over with the defense. 19 sacks in the regular season. That's the fewest by any playoff team over the last 40 years. Opposing, are you ready for this? 51.8% of the time, opposing offenses faced the Titans' defense on third downs. They converted and got the first down. They kept the chains moving. And then it gets even worse. Every 10 times a team got inside the 20-yard line, they scored a touchdown on 69%. So almost 7 out of 10 times teams got inside the red zone. They were scoring, and I'm not talking about 3 points. I'm talking about 7. Ugh. Touchdown, a touchdown in the red zone. So there's a lot that has to happen. They did have, you know, some turnovers. That was something that was pretty good with them as far as interceptions and those things are concerned. But I think personally it all starts up front. So let's look at the defensive line and whether or not they got better, worse, or the same. You lost Jadeveon Clowney, Daquan Jones, Jack Crawford, Mac Dickerson, returners are Jeffrey Simmons, Tierre Tart, Larrell Murchison. The additions, DeNico Autry, Aubrey Jones, Naquan Jones, and Bruce Hector. I'm going to go with the same, and I was leaning towards going better.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with the same, though, because I think Daquan Jones and his impact was very, very underrated. Now, granted, Autry is a guy that got you 7.5 sacks last year, right? That's what he got for the Colts. And he's someone that's going to team with Jeffrey Simmons and be quite a tandem. But I'll say this, low key, if you go back and watch a lot of the close end zone view of games, Clowney and Simmons, they were a wrecking crew. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Jeremy Fowler, he had a post come out on Wednesday, or was it Tuesday? On Tuesday, his post came out where he polled 50 NFL executives, right? And he got feedback from them. And Jeffrey Simmons was considered the 6th best defensive tackle. And the one exec said, you know, Aaron Donald is clearly the best, but Jeffrey Simmons is the closest to him. So that's high praise, right? That's high praise coming for Jeffrey Simmons. And obviously, you know, he's a guy that will continue to get better. I'll say this, Tierre Tart, you know, he's someone to watch too. And he's a guy that last year he had different, you know, flashes, but I think he's someone that could play. And he's a guy that will be a key to run stuffing. He's going to be kind of very influential in replacing Daquan Jones, and Murchison as well is a versatile player. So I think it's still, despite the upside of Tart and Murchison and just Simmons continuing to get better, I think this group is still the same as they were last year.
I'll give the nod a little bit better. And it's not by much. You didn't get much out of Clowney last year, which is really unfortunate, but you can't say enough about how much better Jeffrey Simmons is getting. I mean, he was really good the back half of 2 years ago, and last year, obviously, he broke out, and there's really just room to go up from there. But I love the Autry pick, because Autry's a good interior defensive lineman. as a defensive tackle, as well as, like you mentioned the 7 sacks he had last year. Well, 2 years ago, in less games, in only 12 games, he recorded 9 sacks. So he's got the ability to be able to get to the quarterback, which is something you desperately need. You mentioned how bad the Titans were in pass rush, those 19 sacks being a record low for any playoff team. I think when you address that, even in the slightest bit, even if it's not it's not just the edge rusher, which we'll get to later, but when you address that with someone as a defensive tackle, I think that's going to help you get a little bit better. We'll see what it's like when he's paired next to Jeffrey Simmons. Obviously, when people change teams, sometimes the circumstances can change production. So I can't say with certainty that Autry's going to go out there and automatically give you 7 to 9 sacks in any given season, maybe 10 with the extra game that we have starting in 2021. But I think adding someone with that skill set will make you a little bit better just because it was lacking so bad last year.
So let's move on to outside linebacker. And the additions, Bud Dupree, Rashad Weaver, the lost Clowney, the returners, you have Harold Landry, Derek Roberson, Wyatt Ray, Tuzar Skipper. Better, worse, or the same?
I'll go better with this as well because you're addressing the need. Now, we'll see what Bud Dupree is after the ACL injury. I'd like to believe that due to miracles in modern medicine and surgeries that Dupree can be just as good. He was awesome last year. And with that being said, he also got to play alongside T.J. Watt. So there's a big question mark right here. T.J. Watt demanding a lot of that attention for opposing offenses. And that does help guys like Bud Dupree out a lot that get to play alongside them. So it's the same question I would have for Trey Hendrickson, who signed a big deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. How good is he when there's not a Cam Jordan on the other side of the line to be able to demand that kind of attention and those kind of favorable matchups? I love Dupree's makeup, his physical makeup. I loved what he was at Kentucky. He was that same kind of player there, and he's just now kind of blossoming into his own, especially last year before the injury. And obviously the Steelers' defense did get a little worse last year once Dupree was sidelined with that injury. So right. His impact was felt on the defense as a whole, which makes me more optimistic that he's going to have a similar impact with the Titans' defense as a whole. Anytime you, I'll go ahead and revert to my last answer with the defensive line. Anytime you address what was the worst pass rushing unit of any team in the playoffs, you're going to make yourself a little bit better to me. I also love the Rashad Weaver pick, a guy who you could have some pretty good value wherever they got him in the NFL draft this year. If you're able to just get some production out of him, then it's an absolute plus. I still like Harold Landry as a player too. I don't know, the Dupree one is the big one. Anytime you are addressing a need that you need it so bad, it's hard to say that you got worse in theory. However, he can also not be fully healthy and not give you anything and have a Jadeveon Clowney-esque factor in which there are no sacks, injuries still plaguing him, and you're back to square one. There is a pretty low low floor as well as a high ceiling with this group.
Yeah, I'm going to say they got better, and it's pretty much all on the strength of Dupree. And when I look at this, right, Dupree is a guy that they have been trying to get for quite some time. And they wanted to get him last year around this time, you know, free agent time. He said it, and he wanted to go to the Titans. But I think when you just look at the position itself, right, this is something they've tried to – since Arakpo and Derek Morgan retired, right, they went out and they signed Cameron Wake. They wanted to sign Za'Darius Smith, and it was one of those things where the Packers came in and they made a deal that this was the best deal for him, so he signed. So they've been wanting to address this position. They go ahead and they get their guy in Dupree, and this is a guy that's very capable of being the lead dog. And I know in Pittsburgh, he and T.J. Watt were a tandem. I think you also got to watch just the way that they worked in cohorts with the guys like Cam Hayward, as well as Stephon Tuitt. And I think that's what makes the Autry and Simmons combination that much more dangerous, being able to do those stunts and things with Dupree. And the other things you have to look at is with Dupree, he's not a one-trick pony. This guy could play the run with the best of them as well. And that's what I like about Rashad Weaver. He could get after the passer, but he could also play the run pretty well. So it wasn't really hard to get better than this group last year. A White Ray, I think, is still going to stick around. And Derek Roberson, if he could be healthy a full year, I mean, this is a guy that shows some flashes in 2019 as an undrafted free agent. So, in my opinion, they got better at outside linebacker. But then we kick it into the inside linebackers. And I think, you know, we talk pass rush, right? I think that this group got better as well because Jayon Brown is back. They're going to have him, expect to have him for the full season as opposed to only 10 games. And for me, as I said, you talk pass rush. If you allow this guy to rush the passer, he's very capable of doing it. And I always, anytime I'm talking about Jayon Brown, I go back and point to that 2018 game against the Colts, the season finale, and that dude almost single-handedly won the game for the Titans, despite them having Blaine Gabbert as the daggone frippin' quarterback. So
you get props
from me, yeah, for that. But you look at the returners, you got Jayon Brown, Rashad Evans, David Long. The losses, you lost the boy, Will Compton, and ODB, Darren Bates. The additions, Monty Rice, Ola Adeniyi, B.J. Bello. I think Rice will probably get reps before Adeniyi. Adeniyi, in my opinion, is going to be their special teams ace. But I still think they got better just because Brown is back. And then also a second year with Rashawn Evans. And in my post about this group, I called Rashawn Evans the ultimate diagnose and destroy linebacker. And that's what he does, right? He's a guy that he is all reactionary. And when you have him out there thinking too much, you're not going to get that speed. You're not going to get him busting through the line like I Am Legend. I told him this and he cracked up. But on the Derrick Henry, right before Derrick Henry's 99-yard run, you know, what set that up was him busting through that line and tackling what's your boy's name from Jacksonville at the time? He's in Tampa now. What's the running back's name? From LSU.
Leonard Fournette.
Tackling Leonard Fournette in the backfield, which is no easy thing to do. And that set up that run. And that's what he does. You know, if you look at the Patriots game, 2019, right? The goal line stands they had to, keep the Patriots from scoring a touchdown and setting up that win over New England in the playoffs. So these are all things that I look at that Rashawn Evans does really well. So I think they got better just on the strength of those two things. Evans in year two of a defense, you saw the difference in 18 and 19, just that comfort level. I think that's what you're going to see again this year. And Brown being back is an ultimate thing for them as well.
Mm-hmm. I'll go same just because the personnel is almost mirrored. But it does help that Jayon Brown's coming back. And I think as highly of Jayon Brown as anyone on this Titans defense because of all the things he can do. And that in the modern NFL, you got to be able to have linebackers who can cover. If you don't have any linebackers that can cover, you are toast in this league in a modern NFL. And Jayon Brown fits that mold well. I love David Long for that same reason. David Long is really good at that. I think he's got a good place and a really important role on this team as well. And I will go back to what you said about Evans. Evans is the X factor of, I wouldn't just say this linebacking unit, but this entire defense. It's a contract year. If you're going to get the best year of Evans, it can be this year possibly because of the opportunity that he has in front of them and the opportunity that this whole defense has if you're able to get the best version of Rashawn Evans you can get. But for now, I'm going to go ahead and say that they are similar to what they are last year.
Yeah, so that's the inside linebacker group. Now, one thing I didn't mention about the secondary, right, because we're going to transition to that. They gave up 36 touchdowns in the air. That was the second worst in the league, okay? Mm. So just understand that part, right? We'll start with the safety position. Brady Breeze, Matias Farley, those are the additions. Kenny Vaccaro is the loss. Returners, Kevin Byard, Amani Hooker, Dane Cruikshank, and Chris Jackson. Now, Chris Jackson, even Elijah Molden, frankly, you could bounce these guys back and forth between safety and corner. They're listed as DBs, in fact. So nickel guys, I think that's kind of where they'll fall in line. But I'm going to say this group is the same. And for me, it just comes down to Hooker becoming the starter, Cruikshank becoming the third safety. And I've always been high on Cruikshank, especially when they go in dime package. You know, he's a very good dime backer for them. You go back and watch the playoff game against the Ravens, not last year, but in 2019 when they won. Couple pass breakups late in that game. I think Cruikshank is going to be the X factor in making this safety group kind of pick up where they left off and not have a drop off without Kenny Vaccaro. But, you know, the thing is, when you take Vaccaro out, you're losing, you know, a guy, a wig splitter. You know, you look at him, he will come up and meet whoever it may be right there at the line of scrimmage and tackle them. He will come up and run through an offensive lineman or take their block on so someone else can make the tackle. I wonder who's going to fill that role, right? I do also want to see how Kevin Byard's role differs this year. I think that's going to be something to watch. And he's looking to have a bounce back year. But I still feel that that unit is the same. I don't think they're going to give up 36 touchdown passes, but I think just man for man, they're very similar. They're the same.
Yeah, it is hard to get worse when you give up more touchdowns than your Pro Bowl quarterback threw for. That's pretty difficult. But I think only because of the inexperience, I'm almost leaning that way because there's going to be a lot of question marks. Caleb Farley's health, even though I think it's pretty well reported by you that he'll be ready for training camp. He's also had a very limited amount of games at corner. There's going to be a little bit of a learning curve there.
Well, those are the cornerbacks. We'll get to the cornerbacks.
Okay, you meant secondary.
Looking at the
safety specifically.
That's
okay. Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah, immensely. I think I just grouped everybody in there together. Safeties and a lot of Dane Cruikshank going to be playing in an elevated role. Imani Hooker playing in an elevated role. And I'm a big Kenny Vaccaro guy too. You know that. I've watched a lot of Kenny Vaccaro football ever since he got into the league, drafted by New Orleans. I will say a little bit worse because of the uncertainty and a lot of the X factors. Mm-hmm. However, there is a high ceiling because of that, because obviously those guys don't get elevated to more important positions if this Titans coaching staff doesn't see that in them. And I definitely see that in Imani Hooker. But Cruikshank, I like what you said earlier. He's going to be a big X factor as well because of that elevated role that he hasn't had to have yet.
Exactly. And you kind of touched on the corner, so we'll wrap this show up with them. And so the losses, man, this is where the turnover was. Adoree Jackson, Malcolm Butler, Kareem Moore, Desmond King, returners Christian Fulton, Breon Borders. Additions, Jackrabbit Jenkins, Caleb Farley, Elijah Molden. And don't forget about Quentin Meeks, the former Stanford corner that kind of bounced around, but he has a lot of ability. In my opinion, they got better. And I think getting Jackrabbit Jenkins in here, that low-key is one of their best moves during this offseason. And it's just he gives you exactly what you want. Now, obviously, Butler was a guy that Mike Vrabel called a street rat and really felt that he competed. And you watch Butler compete. I mean, I love how he and Dez Bryant were getting into it in that Ravens game last year, the one in Baltimore. You know, he went up and he was taking him right down. They were trying that now route, and it wasn't working. But I feel that Jenkins does all of that, but he scores the football better. And you know this. You've seen exactly what he was able to do in the opener, right, against the Bucks. You know, he picked six against Tom Brady. So that lets you know what the deal is with that. I think Christian Fulton is a guy that, you know, is going to step up this year too. He's still unproven. Let's make no mistake about it. But I think they've gotten better because Adoree Jackson was still unproven and he was in year four. You know what I'm saying? So
that's true.
I think, you know, you're still okay there with that loss. And Breon Borders is capable. He had some nice reps against Julio Jones, in fact, when I was watching them in minicamp. But I think the X factor really is going to be Farley and Elijah Molden. Elijah Molden, we know, is as Lou Riddick would say, you know, the Jedi of the slot. I think he's going to have that nickel spot. A good hold on that. And I think when you look at him actually being in the mix as a third safety, I think they may use him in those type of roles too. So you could kind of push him into that safety consideration as well. And Caleb Farley, I mean, let's just face the facts. Before injury, this guy was a tremendous player. Mm-hmm. And you talk about scoring the football, he could do that too. And you talk about just being willing to turn and run with anyone. I think when you have someone that size, right, that could turn and run with whoever it is, you heard the comments he had about Tyreek Hill, you know, and you heard what he said about other, you know, faster guys. He wants to go out there and challenge them. And I think when you watch him, he's so quick to open this gate and he'll run down the field with you. Now, sometimes that could kind of transfer into a receiver being able to route him a little bit as far as like break the route off. And as Chris Sanders talked about last week, you know, having everything look like a nine route and then, and start with show the nine and change your mind. You know, that's something that can give him a little bit of trouble. But I think overall, the cornerback group, I think they got better.
Yeah, I would say so too. And mostly because of the Janoris Jenkins addition. I mean, Malcolm Butler not only brought you the talent and skill set that he's got, but he brought you experience. He's played in a few big games, a big leadership role as well. I mean, he's a big emotional part of this team, obviously, going back to that Ravens game that you alluded to earlier with everything that happened at midfield with Coach Harbaugh and the Ravens beforehand. I mean, he's definitely a spark on the defense, and I think the Titans, especially Titans fans, are going to really miss him because I think he's just going to kill it in Arizona. He's going to help them out a ton. But I would say overall they did get better because I am such a Janoris Jenkins guy. I mean, that guy, when you have that much speed, it can make up for even some of the minor deficiencies you might have in your game. When you have that kind of speed and his instincts as a or what I like to call a route jumper, that play you alluded to, that Tom Brady pick six, he backed up, and as the millisecond he saw Tom Brady eyeing the sideline, he jumped the route. And the minute he jumped that, the ball's in his hands, no one is catching him, and it turned it over into 6 points for New Orleans. He's really good at that, and that's one of his best skill sets as a defensive back. A good, reliable veteran corner is definitely what you need to replace Malcolm Butler. We'll see what you get out of Caleb Farley. I think there's going to be some learning curves because of his natural inexperience at the position, and then adding to it that you're playing your first games as a professional, I think it might take a little bit of a while for him to get to where he's going to be. But I mean, by week 7 or 8, I think you're going to have a pretty good version of him after he kind of takes those early season lumps. So I would say they got a little better at the cornerback group.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why Fulton, you know, he's in line to get that right corner position. I think you rotate and they'll be fine. They'll be fine. So overall, I think this defense got better. So, I mean, you know, kind of pairing that with the offense, I feel like this team has gotten better. And the upside is definitely there. And then you have a lot of proven players as well. So this is going to be a fun season to do. So I'm glad we got to go ahead and run through this review. We'll see what we do next week. But until then, we appreciate each of you tuning in. Thank you for taking your time to listen to us. God bless and good night.